Well, today we're continuing our series that we started last week on Modern Family, and we're talking about the complexities of relationships, of family, of marriage, of parenting. And today I really do want to talk about our expectations that we have for relationships. And I'll be up front right from the beginning. If you're a single, if you're a young adult, a student, and you are in some way looking forward to the potential of being married one day, maybe you're dating, maybe you're not that far yet, maybe you're engaged, but that is something you hope might come into your future, then really this is for you. That we put this topic in this slot to make sure that especially some of you students who may go home in the next couple of weeks would still be here, and we want you to hear this. But I want to tell you the message that we have, the principles that we're going to talk about this morning really are something that for all of us, whatever stage of life, are important. That you may be looking forward to marriage, as I said. You may be married and looking around and realizing or thinking that maybe not everything is as great as you thought it would be. Perhaps you're on the other side. You've had some difficulties in relationships. Maybe you've gone through separation or divorce, and you're sort of looking at marriage in the rear view and trying to figure out life with an ex or life as a single parent or some of those things. And I'm going to try to really hit application wherever you're at. But the reason why I really want to speak to some of you who are single and looking forward to marriage is because there are many, many people who are now married or divorced or separated or somewhere along the way that would say, if someone had just told me, or if I could go back and do that over, and I had a heads up on a few things, I knew about some things that I didn't know then that I do know now, I would have been so much better off. I could have avoided so much struggle or pain or problems with my expectations, problems in my relationships. And for some of you, you have an opportunity to do things right off the get-go and to set yourself on a good trajectory. But as I said, we want to talk to everybody, and for all of us, perhaps today might be a day where you'd look around and say, my life maybe needs to change trajectory. My marriage maybe needs a change in direction. My parenting maybe needs a change in the way that I'm operating in my home, and that we would listen to God's word today and some of the principles that he has for us and follow them. Now listen, just to be real honest, if you search the pages of Scripture and you're saying, hey, where does it talk about, you know, how to get a girlfriend, how to get a boyfriend 101. You're not going to find it. It's not in there. Culturally, we're so different. There's no book of the Bible written on those kind of things. And so I'm upfront about that. That's how it is. But we are going to just delve into some scriptures and talk about some principles, again, that I believe will be important for all of us. First thing I want us to do, and again, wherever you're at in life, is just to think about this as the first thing on your notes. You want somebody who... Think about this, a little bit of a list. And if you're single, maybe somebody has told you to do this. Before you start dating, before you think of being with someone, write a list of some of the characteristics, some of the things that you're looking for. Make sure that you set the bar high and that you have standards. So there's space for you. You can make up your own stuff here. Just start thinking. What are the things that you're looking for, the things that you want in someone to date or to pursue? So we have a couple things right off the bat. We're all going to be there. Someone that we're physically attracted to on some level. There's some kind of chemistry. Someone who has a sense of humor. Maybe they're funny. Somebody that we have interests in common with, that we can go on dates and we have fun and we have things to talk about. We have interests that overlap, and so it's easy to do some of those things. They might be part of your list. And then you might move down and get a little bit more serious and say, I'm looking for someone who's hardworking, someone who maybe has a job, someone who's intelligent or has a positive attitude. I want someone who's a good provider, someone who makes good financial decisions, or someone that makes me feel like I'll be safe. They can take care of me, or we can take care of each other and trust each other in our finances. Someone who's supportive, someone who's helpful, someone who's loyal, faithful, shares some of the values, someone who's involved in the church, all kinds of things. You might make your own list there. And if you're married and you want to do this too, I invite you, go ahead. What are some of the characteristics that I would really love my spouse to have? Now, you got to be careful with this, because you write the things and you elbow them and give them the list. Get on it. You got to stay with me for a few minutes and see where we're going. That's not the point. But you might want to say, hey, what is the kind of spouse that I would like to be married to, that kind of person? And you might have insights that you didn't have when you were dating or before that. You might talk about self-control or forgiveness or humility, being self-sacrificing, being active and hardworking. And some of you, again, you may be looking at marriage a bit in your rear view, and maybe you're a single parent or divorced or separated, and maybe you just want to think about how you'd like to be treated by your ex. Or maybe you want to just list some things about parenting. What kind of parent do your children need you to be? And jot those down. Here's a question I want you to ask as you write out that list and you set some high standards for, if I'm going to be with someone in the future, this is the kind of person I want. Or I'm married, but this is the kind of spouse that I really desire to be with. Here's what I want you to ask yourself this morning and today as we walk through God's Word together. Are you the person, or are you becoming the person that the person you're waiting for is waiting for? Follow me? Are you becoming the person that the person you're waiting for is waiting for? So if you take that list and you see all these wonderful things that you've written down, oh, it'd be amazing if this guy or this girl in the next week or so just jumped into my life and I could be with them and build something with them, and they had all these wonderful characteristics, and they're so, you know, they're intelligent and hardworking, and they're following the Lord, and they're active in the church, and they're self-sacrificing. If they showed up and met you, are you the person that they're looking for and waiting for? If you're married and you wrote out this list of characteristics, I wish my spouse was this, I wish my spouse was that, I would love for them to have this characteristic, are you the husband or the wife that your husband or wife wants to be married to? Are you that kind of person, or are you becoming that kind of person? Because here's where this kind of breaks down, is that we look at lists like this, and we're told, make a list sometimes and have high standards, and those are all true. That's good stuff. But we sometimes subconsciously think that when that kind of person comes into our life, when they show up and we're going to be with them, then everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be wonderful. And so we read verses like here in Psalm 37. That's where we're going to be this morning if you want to turn there. Psalm 37, it says this: be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. And so sometimes we take a verse like that and we apply it to different areas of our lives. We apply it to romance and dating and marriage. And we say, okay, I've made my list. I have my standards. Now, what do I do? What do I do? And somebody said, and if you're single, you hate this. This is the worst. But if you've been in church long enough, or you have, you know, parents, Christian parents, not even necessarily Christian parents, you've probably been told this at some point. Maybe a youth group leader told you this. It's so frustrating. They say, be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Isn't that the worst? Some of you are thinking, I've been waiting my entire life. I've been waiting for 20 years. I'm done waiting. I don't want to hear, just wait. And what am I supposed to do? Sit around? You know, it says, be still before the Lord, and be quiet before the Lord. And so we say, what does this mean? I sit down and make sure I have a really good quiet time. And I sit there staring into my Bible, waiting, waiting, waiting. Until finally that guy that fills all that list, that girl that's perfect for me, shows up, and God finally does it all, because I've been still, I've been quiet, and God's finally answered. And here is the answer. It's this person who's come into my life. Isn't that the most frustrating thing? Just wait. Just wait and do nothing? Is that what you're supposed to do? And here's the problem, because we take some of those advice, you know, nuggets that we get, and they're good advice, but we start to draw conclusions from it. So we think, here's the person I'm looking for. Now I'm going to wait on the Lord to provide it. And when that person comes, when that guy comes, when that girl is dropped in my lap, when I finally meet them, then everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be set. I'll finally be able to be happy and fulfilled and satisfied. And we put all this pressure on this idea that this person is going to come into our life, and then that is going to be it. We finally made it. And all the work that we have to put in, all the striving that we have to do, is just trying to find that person. You know, that in our minds, that one soulmate, true person that God has for us out there, that perfect person. And somewhere in our subconscious, we think, okay, the work that I have to do is to just try and find that person. I'm going to find that person. I'm going to meet that person. I'm going to date with that person. And then once that happens, oh, I'll be good. The Apostle Paul, who wrote most of our New Testament, he wrote that chapter we call the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. A lot of you all know it. You know, he talks about what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. Does not envy. It does not boast. And he goes on and on. And he talks about how practically love should be lived out, how all of these characteristics come from love, and love is this action-oriented thing. And he's actually not talking specifically about romantic love. He's actually talking about the love that we have for each other in the church and how we operate as a family, as a church family. But he is talking about love, and when he gets towards the end of that whole section talking about how practical love is and how it should be lived out, there's this amazing verse where he says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, and I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. When I was a kid, I thought like a kid, and I reasoned like a kid. I acted like a kid because I was a kid. But there comes a point in time in life where you need to grow up, and you need to start to see the world for how it is, and you need to start looking at the truth of our reality, not just our expectations and what we want. So, for example, we sometimes, as I've already said, we look and we think, all of my effort, all of my energy needs to go into finding that right person, because then everything's going to be good. That my life right now is not exactly how I would like it to be. There's struggles that I have, and, you know, emotionally I have desires. I want to be with someone. I want this. I want that. And if this person would just come. And we have almost this fairy tale idea of what a relationship is, right? Think of every fairy tale that you've ever been told. You know, there's a damsel in distress, just so needy. And she's just waiting for that Prince Charming or that knight in shining armor to come along and to defeat all the enemies and to save her. And then as soon as that she gets saved and they come together and they know this is the one for me, and they fall in love. And do you know what happens next? Just about every fairy tale? And they live happily ever after. It's the end of the story. They go off into the sunset and it's just going to be great. They're going to live together in bliss. And they're fairy tales. So listen, when I was a child, I thought like a child and I reasoned like a child. I looked at the fairy tales and that's what I thought life was like. But when I became a man, when I became a grown-up, I realized that that's not reality, that those expectations are dangerous. And this whole idea that we just wait for that one person that God's going to put in our life and he's going to make everything better. And once I find them, the work ends and life starts and bliss starts. It's just not true. It's just not the way things work. And so if you're filling in the blanks, here's our first blanks. Get this. Good intentions are no substitute for good habits. We all have great intentions when it comes to marriage, when it comes to parenting and family, when it comes to dating. This is what my future is going to look like. It's going to be wonderful. We even come up, we get married at the front of the church. This is where I got married, said my vows, and we promise the world to people. We promise things that oftentimes we cannot fulfill, we cannot follow through on. And we have great intentions. What you need to know, especially if you're not yet at marriage, you're looking forward to it, you're going to be blessed if you would just take this in and know it going ahead, that good intentions are not a substitute for good practices, good habits, good choices. And in life, we need to stop sometimes acting like children and reasoning like children and realize that if we want that good, solid, deep relationship, we can't just think like children. If you're married already, you know this, but maybe today's a good wake-up call for you to be reminded that, hey, if you're just kind of going with the flow here and things aren't going well, you're not getting the results that you want in your relationship, in your marriage. Well, you might have the greatest intentions, but until you start following through with good habits and good practices, you're going to find that there's going to be trouble. So what do? Well, we wait. While we wait for that one that we want to date, that we want to pursue marriage with, while we wait for our marriage to get better and stronger, while we wait for our parenting to improve, what is it that we're supposed to do? Are we just supposed to sit around and do nothing, or is there something more? So Psalm 37, I'm going to start in verse 3. Verse 3 says, "Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness." That last phrase, befriend faithfulness, it's a tough one in the Hebrew, and you may have a different translation there. It may talk about, in your translation, feeding on good pasture or something like that. The way that I think best translated is cultivate faithfulness. So here's the psalm, and here's the background of the psalm. It's a psalm of David, which means the King David in Israel either wrote this psalm or it was written for him and about him. And we just think of his background for a second. He started out as a shepherd, as a nobody, collecting no real attention. God took him in his life. He made him a giant killer, literally David and Goliath. He made him a king and then the greatest king in Israel up until Jesus Christ. Just did amazing things with his life. And in this Psalm 37, what it's about is someone looking around, David looking around and seeing how other people are prospering. Other people are doing well, but they're not doing it the right way. They're doing it their own way. They're doing evil things. And one of the things that this psalm is intended for is to say, listen, don't look around and say, wow, look at them. Look at what they're getting. Look at their relationship. Hey, so-and-so, I wish I had what they have. They're dating already. They're engaged already. They're married already. We should have kids like them already. We should be in this position. I can't believe I haven't found anybody yet. And so-and-so, they just it seems so easy for them. Or this couple, they're just diving into all kinds of stuff and building that relationship. I'm not there yet. And part of this psalm is just to say, hey, listen, in all aspects of life, you can look around at people doing it all different ways and all kinds of ways that aren't so good. And at times it looks good. But you need to focus back down on what God has for you. And so here's where we pick it up in verse 3. He says, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness, or cultivate faithfulness. That is, if you want to have things in your life that are sturdy, that are secure, that are steadfast, you need to cultivate those things. You need to work at them. It doesn't just happen by accident. If you go up to anybody that you know that has an excellent marriage or are great parents, has a really solid family, and you ask them, man, you've been together for decades, for 30 years, for 40 years, for 50 years, your kids are doing wonderful, you've got such great relationships, you say, what's the secret? How did you do that? I'll guarantee you that none of them will say, we kind of fell backwards into it, got lucky. It was kind of an accident. We just had some chemistry, and we've rode the chemistry for the last 50 years, and you know, never really had too much difficulty. It just kind of happened. No one is going to tell you that. Oh, we just met, and it was the one for me, and then that person fulfilled all my needs right up until today. It's never going to happen. Never going to happen. Cultivate faithfulness. You know, these things go together, and he says there's two aspects to this. One is trust. Trust God, and the other one is do good or work good. So trust God. That's the part I know we don't love it, especially when we're single or we're struggling in our relationships. And say, trust God that he has something better. Be patient. Don't look around and say, maybe we're just doing all this wrong and we'll just do it like Joe does it or like they do it and we'll go off track and do our own thing. Saying here, honestly, today, and I'm saying to you honestly, trust God. Trust God with your marriage. Trust God with your parenting. Trust God with your relationships or your potential relationships. Trust him to do it his way. That's what today is about, because he has something so good for you. And then you need to work at it. You're going to need to work at some practical things to till the soil of your life. Listen, there's so much in this life that we cannot control. We can't control our circumstances. Sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down, sometimes we're struggling, and sometimes, you know, you get sick or you get injured or somebody hurts you and you can't control that. You can't control how somebody else is going to act. You can't control the day that you meet that person that you think you have a connection with. But what you can control is your own character. Again, are you the person that the person you're waiting for is waiting for? Are you the spouse that your spouse wants to be married to? You can't always control the way I act, but you can control who you're becoming, your character traits. You know, when Brian and I were first dating, as we were moving towards marriage, we had some friends, that they just come from a very different worldview. They're not Christians or any of that. And we had some of them, and you know, I don't want you to make it sound like we've got it all together, we're perfect, but I had one friend, and he would always say to me, I would love one day just to have what you guys have. I'd love to find that person. I'd love to be with that. It's just what you guys have. It looks so great. I'd love to have that. And so we talk about that from time to time. Sometimes he'd say, you know, so how'd you get that? How'd you get such a great girl? How'd you get such a great relationship? And I say, yeah, you know, over time, as we talked about it, you know, one of the things we do is every week we we have breakfast together and we talk about our faith and our relationship with the Lord, where we're going, and sometimes we'll study a book on that and just talk to each other about how it's going. And you would say, oh, yeah, I don't need that. Forget about that. But how do you really get to where you're in? He said, I know you say you weren't going to do this, but the sex must be really great. Well, actually, we've decided we're not going to sleep together until after we're married, because we don't want our physical attachment to go ahead of our emotional and spiritual commitments. We want to work on a relationship that's more than that. He says, yeah, I don't want that either. I don't want that either. But how did you get to where you're at? How did you get such a great relationship? And I said, well, you know, we have a goal in mind where we want to get married, and we're trying to get to a place where we could commit to each other in such a way where even when we hurt each other, we forgive and restore, and we work on those things and communicate. And so we have that in mind, and we want to have a life together where we commit and we say, hey, even when things aren't going well, I'm going to stay with you. And he says, yeah, I'm not interested in that. I just need to know how it is you got such a relationship. I said, I don't think you want the kind of relationship that I have. Because people get confused. They see some chemistry. They see, hey, you can go mini putting together and enjoy a night together. And they think, what a great relationship. But what is lasting, what is deep, and what is satisfying is so much more than that. And it requires putting in some effort. It requires cultivating the soil of faithfulness in your own life. It requires a bit of discipline. And saying, when things aren't going well, I'm going to work on this. And we're going to build something that's deeper. And listen, some of us, we need to stop acting or thinking or reasoning like children and thinking, hey, you get married and it's supposed to be just a free ride as you go along. Because what happens is people get married. And listen, if you're looking forward to marriage, there are people who would love to go back and do this again, who would love for you to know this ahead of time so that you don't fall in the same trap. Because they get married and then they come into hardships. And some of that passion, some of that initial flame that was just so hot, you know, there's days where it's not quite there. And people start thinking, because of that mindset, maybe I married the wrong person. Maybe this wasn't my soulmate. I thought we were just supposed to have these great feelings. It was just supposed to flow along. It was just supposed to be easy. And then the problem is they go out into the world, they go out into the office or to the gym or to somewhere out there, and they're thinking, oh, my wife, my husband, they're just not the right person for me anymore. I'm falling out of love. And you know what inevitably happens? Guess who shows up? Mr. Right. Miss Right. Well, that's my soulmate, because they give me that great feeling. And man, if I was with them, everything would be easy again. And don't you see this mindset that our culture will tell us over and over, that you see this person and they're just perfect for you, and so once you get with them, things will be good and happy and you just go along. It's just not true. And some of us have that mindset and that expectation that just that passion that you initially feel is gonna just keep you going throughout all of life. It's going to keep you happy and satisfied. And we put that person, whether we've met them yet or not, on a pedestal and say, this is the person that's going to satisfy me, that's going to make me happy, that's going to fulfill me. And all I need to do is look for that person on the list. And so many people have got to the point where they realize it just wasn't true. That's not the way things work. And you may not be able to control other people. You may not be able to control how your husband or wife responds. You can ask yourself, even today, especially if you're married, maybe you're divorced, you're separated, and you say, am I the person that my spouse wants to be married to? Am I becoming that kind of person? Am I working on that kind of character? And listen, again, if you're looking forward to marriage, if you're still, you know, before that point in your life and you see that somewhere in the future, you have such an opportunity to say, man, I want to get this right, or at least I want to get it as right as I can. And it means I'm willing to cultivate the soil, cultivate faithfulness in my own life, something secure, steadfastness, a character that will help me in my marriage that will go well. And now you got to understand, happiness and faithfulness go together. So you say, well, that might sound like a lot of work, like you just have to work at it. But this is where the joy comes from. This is where something deeper and lasting and fulfilling comes from. Verse 4, it says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Again, some of us would read that and we say, okay, so if I'm applying this to my romantic life, I'm going to sit and I'm going to read my Bible. I'm going to be quiet and still and wait for the Lord. And I'm just going to delight in him until I have such a wonderful quiet time that I'm just so happy. And then God will give me whatever it is that I want. Oh, God, I'll start out just by telling you that once I'm delighted in you, I would like a boyfriend. I'd like a girlfriend. I'd like $1 million. And then once I get to that delight, what a wonderful quiet time, then that's going to happen. God's going to give me exactly what I want. when we look a little deeper into some of these phrases and words, we find something different. That first word, delight, in Hebrew, if you really dig into that, the context there, that they use that for, delight, it's like the word delicate or pliable, moldable. So it says, delight yourself or make yourself pliable before the Lord, before God. Here's something you need to know about yourself, whether you acknowledge this or not, whether you want to admit it or not. We are all pliable people. We are all moldable people. People influence us. Things that we see influence us. It changes the way we think. It changes the way we feel. We're all moldable. The question is, what are we going to allow to mold our hearts? And so many of us, unconsciously or subconsciously, we allow culture, we allow our friends, sometimes not the greatest influence, and we allow significant others, again, sometimes not the greatest choice, to mold us, to change us, to go along with what they want. And so for some of us, when we get into a dating relationship and we just rush in and we say, wow, this guy, this girl, they're perfect in so many ways, but not every way, and we just want to be with someone, and we end up delighting in them. And if that person is not the kind of person that you want to be with, if their character is not what it should be, then they end up molding us and changing us, and it's not always a good direction. And here the psalmist says, delight yourself in the Lord. Become pliable and moldable in the Lord. If you want to become the person that you need to be for your spouse or your future spouse, you need to say, I'm willing to delight myself in the Lord, to recognize that true joy and happiness is not going to be found in that person anyway. They may help you get there in certain ways, but if you put them in that point, you're setting them up to be an idol. Instead, delight yourself in the Lord. Say, God, I trust you that my best possible life, my deepest satisfaction and fulfillment is found in you. And then to know that what will happen when you delight yourself in the Lord that way, when you allow him to change you and mold the way that you think, those desires in your heart will be your true desires. He will reveal to you the deep desires that you have. You know, some of us, we skim off the surface, right? We say, I just want a boyfriend, when really we want someone that will truly love us and pay attention to us. We say, I really want sex, a sexual release, when really what we want, what we desire deep down is intimacy with someone else, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually. We know these desires, they're good, and they're given to us by God, but we distort them. And what culture will do, and sometimes what a partner will do for you, or friends that don't always have the best advice for you sometimes will do, is they will mold you in the direction of convenience. They'll mold you in the direction of a quick gratification, a flash in the pan, something that feels good now. We'll just pursue it. Just do it. Just go for it. Do it the way I did it. Do it the way you see it on the movie. Do it the way you see it on TV. Do it the way culture does it. It's easy. You really want to go through all this hard work, and what they want to promise is the joy and happiness of a deep and fulfilling marriage or parenting or family situation. What they skip over is the real part where you say, when I was a child, I felt like that too, but that's not my reality. And if I want to have something deep and lasting and fulfilling, I need to work on who I am, becoming the person that I need to be, becoming the person that my spouse wants to be married to, becoming the person I'm waiting for is waiting for, so that when they show up and they have all these wonderful, amazing qualities and they meet me, they say, you're the kind of person I'm looking for too. Happiness and faithfulness go together. Delight yourself in the Lord. It's not the easy way. It is the better way. So verse 5 says, commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will act. Commit your way to the Lord. This is where it gets practical. Your way is your life. It's the way that you do things. It's the decisions that you make. And if you're going to delight yourself in the Lord, if you're going to commit your way to the Lord, you're going to need to trust him. You're going to need to trust that he has that best possible life for you. Because what this is saying is, take your plans, take your decision-making, the way that you operate your life, and roll it over to God and commit to the way he would have you live. Commit your life. Commit your decisions. Commit your actions What he's saying here is you have an opportunity to set the trajectory of your life, where you want to go by the decisions you make. And again, don't take this childish, we just kind of back into it and life just happens and marriage just happens and a good relationship just happens. We need to act and think and reason like adults who know that there's some work that has to be put in this. And so God is saying here, commit your ways, your actual practical decisions in life to do it God's way and trust in him. Trust that he will act. Trust that he will bless that. Trust that happiness and faithfulness go together. And when you build that into your life, there is blessing there. And though there are things you can't control and your circumstances might change, you can set your trajectory to becoming the person God has called you to be. And there to find more peace, more happiness, more joy in your relationships. So let me talk to you about three different ways that we have. And these are three things that if you go to any marriage counselor or if you talk to people long enough, they're at or near the top of every list in things that people fight about in their marriage. Things that break people up, things that communication breaks down over. And I'm going to tell you, if you're in a marriage now, you may be thinking of other things, and that's fine. And the challenge to you today is wherever you're struggling, wherever you're arguing, wherever things are falling apart in your marriage, that today you would say, I'm going to commit this to the Lord. Whatever that issue is, I'm going to do it God's way. If you're single and you're looking towards marriage, maybe you're dating and you're getting serious, these are things that, listen, before you get to that point of saying I do with someone, these are things you should be on the same page about. Because people who aren't, when they get in marriage, statistically, these are the things that break them up and tear them apart. And so as you go, especially if you get engaged, you do some premarital counseling, you need to talk about some of these things because they come up in every marriage. Here's the first one, family. Family, it's going to come up. Kids, do you want kids? Do you not want kids? How are you going to raise the kids? What does discipline look like? What's their schooling going to look like? Are we going to raise them in the church? How involved are grandma and grandpa on both sides going to be? What about our relationship with the in-laws? Family things are going to come up, and it's a huge one that divides couples based on kids. You know, when people get into marriages, there's a couple things that they try and do when things aren't going well to fix it. And married people, some of you, don't nudge anybody or anything, embarrass yourself. But, you know, sometimes things aren't going real well. So one spouse, I won't tell you which one, typically will say, we need to have more sex. And the other one says, that's not how it works. And then the other spouse, I won't tell you which one, eventually comes up and says, maybe we should have a baby. And the man says, hey, that'll require more sex. I'm into it. And then, you know, we'll just bring in another life into our problems, into our struggles, and that'll solve it all. But kids are a huge thing. And so listen, if you're not married yet, I'm not telling you to figure out, hey, I want to have three kids, two boys and a girl. You don't have to figure out all these details, but to start to think through, what do I want my family life to look like? That when you're dating someone, you're getting serious again, not first date. You're going to blow it. But as you get towards that time, how many kids do you want? Let me order dinner first. But as you get to that point where you're really serious with someone, these are conversations you have. And how do you practice that? Listen, if you have tension in your family life now with your parents, with your siblings, with your extended family, if those relationships are struggling and you don't have good relationships there, you don't know how to relate to those people, don't think that I'm just going to start a new family and start over and it's going to be easy, it's going to be good. You need to go and start practicing with those people. Your past will eventually show up in your present and affect your future. So how do you practice? How do you relate to your parents? How do you relate to your brothers and sisters? How do you relate to the people closest to you in your family and start working on those deep family relationships? And when somebody comes and you want to know what family looks like, you've practiced those things like being self-sacrificing, looking out for someone else's interests, being invested in your family and giving time and energy to care for others in your family, not just being a selfish person. Here's the second one, finances. Finances breaks up more marriages, some studies would suggest, than anything else ever, is money and how you deal with money. And if you're with someone, you're getting to that point where you think maybe we could be together forever, at some point you need to talk about your money. And listen, for some of you, especially if you're students or you're a young adult, you're single and you don't have a ton of responsibilities, you may never in your life be less motivated to deal with this than today. right? It's just me. I do what I want with my finances. I got my own money. I have nobody else to look after, nobody else to worry, nobody to argue about it. So you might say, I'm just good with it. You might say, I don't even have a lot of money. I just work summers and that's it. Listen, this is perhaps the thing that breaks up more marriages than anything else. And if you can start to cultivate faithfulness in your own personal finances, this will bless you in the future. If you can learn how to live off of less than you make, if you can learn right off the top and stand on the fact that you say, my first percentage of whatever I make, always I give away, I give to the church, I give to the poor right off the top, no matter what. I save the next percentage and then I live off of what less than I earn. Think of the blessing this could be. Think of finally meeting that person and, you know, you start to get serious and talk about, well, maybe we should talk about your finances. Think of the difference in saying, well, you know, I hate that you have to hear this, but I've got $75,000 in credit card debt versus I've been working hard because I've been waiting for you. And I knew that when we got together, we might want to buy a house after we get married, and I wanted to be ready for that. And so I've learned some good financial practices, and I've learned how to pay off my debt and save some money and look forward to the future, and I want to bless you with that. And I want to be able to start our marriage with good financial practices and discipline so that we don't dig ourselves a hole and add a whole bunch more stress into our married life. Let's get on the same page with our finances. It's so crucial. The third one, perhaps the most important one, is faith. There are so many people, and I've talked to so many people who've come and said, you know, I'm dating this guy, I'm dating this girl, everything's going great. They're everything on my list. They're just so wonderful. They're just so amazing. You know, the only problem is they're not a follower of Jesus. What should I do? And I got to tell you, this is so, so, so important. Please pay attention if you're a single right now. There are so many people that would love to tell you before you go too far down that road. There are so many people who would love to go back and do it again, who would tell you, listen, I know once in a while it happens that that person comes to faith, but it is the exception to the rule. And there are people who have endured pain and struggle because they overlook that standard. And they would tell you, if I could just do it again, if I could just do it again, please no. Cultivate faithfulness in your relationship with Jesus Christ. Make Jesus Christ as a single person, listen to me, please pay attention, the most important thing in your life. I am passionately, with all that I am, pursuing Jesus Christ. That is my life. That is where I'm going. That is what I'm doing. And I'm doing practical things to make sure that I commit my way to God. And if somebody comes along and they're good looking and they're attractive and you think it might work and you say, hey, I just need you to know something. This is where I'm going in life. I am passionately following Jesus Christ, period. Now, if you're going to distract me from that, I don't have time. But if you're on the same wavelength, let's go and push each other towards Jesus Christ. This is the most important thing. It is not just tweaking with someone's personality or practices to say, well, they have everything else on the list. If they would just come to church a bit, if they would just come to know the Lord, and then we'd be fine. It's not like saying, I hope when we get married, he stops watching so much baseball. It's not the same thing. This is a life-transforming decision. And if you're going to set your trajectory towards Jesus Christ and following him, you need to cultivate that and do the hard work of disciplining that into your life. And you need to wait and make so sure that if you're going to share a life with somebody, they're on board with that. And you say, I just need you to know, this is where I'm going. This is where you're going because this is where I'm going. I'm following Jesus. And I'm going to be involved in the church. And I'm going to be there on Sundays. And I'm going to raise my kids there. And this is what I want for my life. Are you with it or not? Please, 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 singles, don't overlook this. This is the most important thing. It's so crucial. It's what makes marriage so amazing, when two people have that mindset and they come together to say, I want to push you towards Jesus more and more. This is what it's about today. Wherever you're at today, you might be single. Maybe you're married. Maybe you're divorced. You're a single parent. We have a chance to stop and say, we can set the trajectory for the next phase of our life. Commit your way to the Lord. commit your ways to doing what he does and trust him, because he will act. He will bless that. He will be active in your life if you will follow him. I'm going to close with this. This is the secret to marriage right here. And next week we're going to talk more about this real practically, but this is it. I'm going to give you the secret, the mystery of marriage right now. This is worth the price of admission. I'm serious. I'm going to give it to you. Paul, he talks about this in Ephesians. And here's what he says. You know, some of us, when it comes to relationships and marriage, the way that we do it is we kind of, it's like trying to put together a puzzle without the picture. You ever try to do that? I mean, you get a really complicated 1,000, 2,000 piece puzzle that has a zillion different flowers that all look the same, and you try and piece all those pieces together, but you don't know what it looks like. And you may every now and then get a few pieces together and get some of the edges in the corner, but trying to fill out that puzzle when you can't see the big picture is just so difficult and aggravating, and adds stress into your life. And for some of us, that's how we feel in our relationships. Just stress and stress and stress in our marriage. It's just seems to be more tension and more tension and more tension, trying to fit all these pieces together, and just doesn't seem to be working. And so today is your challenge to commit your way to the Lord. I want to show you the big picture that makes sense of all the other little pictures, all the forgiveness and grace and self-sacrificing and giving up of time and giving your, you know, for the other person. Where does this all come? How does this all make sense? Paul says in Ephesians 5, and he's talking about a man and a woman coming together into one flesh relationship, married, two lives becoming one. He says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery, the secret to marriage, is profound. And I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. Listen, you can listen to everything I said today. You can say, Dave, I don't know if I buy it. I just want to delight in that girl or that guy that will come along. You know, I just want to do it my way. I just want to jump ahead some stages. I just want to have that kind of relationship and do whatever I want, not have boundaries. I just want to do all that. And it sounds like there's a bunch of work into trying to mold your own character like Christ and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if I buy that that's really the best way for marriage, and that's the best, happiest, delightful state to be in. Just hear this. The one who created marriage, God Almighty, who invented the entire idea, he said this: marriage is not an end in itself. And if you think that being with someone else, married, dating, sexually, whatever, is going to fulfill you and satisfy you, you're mistaken. Because here's the big picture of marriage. When you do it right, when you're doing it well, when it's running on course, the best possible thing that marriage is a big sign that points to the gospel. It's a big sign that points to the fact that nothing in this world can satisfy you. That not even a person who is amazing and wonderful, and you feel these amazing feeling force, can fill that hole inside of you. And so your marriage points to the fact, it shows the love of God, who loved you so much, so unconditionally, even though you're so broken, even though we so didn't deserve it, that he would send his son to die for you, so that you could be in relationship with him for all of eternity. That is what marriage does. That's the secret. It points us to the gospel. Would you commit your ways as a single, as someone looking forward to dating and married, as a married couple, to saying, I want all my ways to reflect that gospel love, that the gospel might be the center of your marriage and of your home, and that in that God might be glorified as other people look in and they see his love. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I pray today. I pray for those who are struggling with their relationships, for those who perhaps are dealing with a lot of tension and disharmony in their marriage. God, would today be a day where everyone involved would commit their ways to you and to making things better, bringing the gospel back to the center of their home, their marriage, their parenting. God, I pray for those who are looking back on marriage, maybe have had a really difficult time. God, would you heal those wounds, and would you show yourself to be enough for them, to know that you fill that deep desire, even in the pain and the hurt. God, for those who are looking forward to marriage, I pray that today would be a day where they commit to tilling the soil of faithfulness and steadfastness in their own life, that they would be willing to become the person that you've called them to be, that the person they want to be with wants to be with. God, would you heal wounds? Would you restore marriage and family where it's needed? God, would you protect those who are looking forward, that they might commit your ways, that all of us might commit our ways to you, and that in that we might see you act, that you would bless us, and that we glorify you in our lives, our marriage, our parenting, all for Jesus' sake.